You're tuning into the Active Mom Podcast with physical therapist, Dr. Carrie Pagliano, a real mom's guide to all things postpartum return to workouts after baby. If you're a postpartum mom, coach, trainer, or physical therapist looking for answers on how to get back to running, CrossFit, yoga, Pilates, HIIT, you name it, without the fear of pelvic floor issues or doing something wrong, this is the podcast for you. Let's start the show. All right. I have a fun story about our very next guest. Anyone that is willing to DM me a video at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning and talk about work is kind of badass in my view. And you're willing to show me your face at that time of day. Okay. So I've been following Nutrition by Mel for a long time. And then I forget, you know, I think I had a question for you. You sent me back a DM video and I was like, this is my girl. So happy to have Mel Silver on the podcast. Welcome. And tell us a little bit about kind of who you are, where you're from, and kind of what you do.
Thanks, Carrie. Yes, I'm a big fan of the video message. I feel like text can get misconstrued and like voice notes are great, but a good video, you kind of get all of it if you can't actually be in the flesh to like really feel the energetic connection. Yes, I'm Mel Silver. I am a registered dietitian. I specialize in performance nutrition and women's health. So really bridging the gap between the two. We have a ton of information as it relates to sports nutrition, performance nutrition. But as we all know here, a lot of it is based on male data. And so how do we relay that into our female athletes, our female bodied athletes? And then you tie in the women's health component where you have, when we start as girls and we go through menstruation and puberty and our bodies change, just how poorly we are prepared for that, to understand our body, to be in our body. And we are reliant and taught from a young age to be reliant on other people telling us what's happening and what things mean versus understanding what is happening in all actuality and being allowed to understand it. So it is very much my mission to work with girls and women throughout the course of their life, navigating puberty, navigating the perinatal journey, so fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, particularly as it relates to athleticism and taking on and shifting identities and understanding what it means to navigate that, nourishing your body, yeah, that we can continue to do the things that we love. And then obviously perimenopause and menopause as well. So you just have a very unique series of events that occurs for us and us alone. Yeah. And I am all about supporting being in your body and making informed decisions for yourself.
That's awesome. I feel like it's funny right now. I feel like I'm drinking from the fire hose from all angles of that, having just kind of, you know, diving into perimenopause and also having a daughter who's on like the cusp of puberty and, you know, having to have those conversations and then dealing with postpartum. Like we're just doing all the things today. But for yeah. you have a pretty unique story, kind of as a collegiate athlete and then kind of transitioning, you know, eventually into becoming a mom and then deciding that this was kind of something you wanted to dive in more. Tell us a little bit about kind of what was your experience of that as a collegiate athlete?
Sure. So I only played a year, and by playing, I mean, I rode the bench. So it was kind of a big shift for the first time in my
what
life
sport
as
was
an
it?
Athlete. I was soccer. And I went into college as a dietetics major knowing like, hey, nutrition for performance, this is awesome. Like this is an untapped lever for many people. So I was already interested in that, but to be honest, like when I went to college, I really just wanted to play soccer. And when I went and it was the first time I was not starting or playing or seeing the field and like sitting on the bench, riding the bench, that was its own special navigation. And then on top of that, I had mono that first semester, mm-hmm. like during season. My coach ran me into the ground. So it wasn't like an understanding of like, oh, she's sick, not just underperforming or anything. So I was pretty beat up between the coaching and kind of team culture component to that as well. And it was through some conversations with my coaches, because I was the type of human being, or I should say I am, was like, tell me what to do. Like, I want to see the field. And there was poor communication from my staff. And so the only messaging I ever received was, you're not fit enough And so I translated that, as we hear kind of many other people navigate this, as I need to be smaller. I need to be faster. I'm too big. At 18, that was where I went with it. And this was well before Reds. And I think we'd heard of the female athlete triad, but it's not something that I was intimately exposed to. So that set me off on kind of a wild ride, if you will, and ultimately ended up quitting team heading into my sophomore year, because I recognized that kind of no matter what I did, it wasn't going to be enough, that the environment was toxic to me. And I actually had my coach tell me I was going to fail at life for quitting her team.
Wow. That's impressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, okay, this is the right decision.
Right. You're like, thank you for confirming that I thought you were correct. Yes. Did you, you know what I'm thinking of when you're telling this story? Did you read Kara Goucher's book?
Not yet.
Mm-mm. Okay. She talks a lot about this. And the thing is, I think Lauren Fleshman might have done that too, about that look and that feeling of fitness and what fit meant, and you wanted to be fit. And our generation, fit meant skinny as a rail. Yeah, that's what's just going through my head, right? You definitely should read it. It's an excellent book. But I'm glad you got away from that coach. She might want to do a little education. Hopefully she's not coaching girls still.
still coaching girls.
Okay, so we won't talk about where you went to school.
That's okay. Interesting kind of like early exposure as someone who wanted to into performance. I kind of found once I entered the world as a dietitian myself that I wanted to spend a lot of time and energy continuing to support athletes in sport, and then also educating coaches, athletic trainers, support staff on how to speak to their athletes. How can we have conversations about performance that don't lead to disordered eating behaviors? And so it kind of just evolved from there. So I have always done work in that space. I also, as a dietitian, have worked in hospitals, and I've worked for physicians' practice. So I have a ton of like very clinical experience as well, which when approached by RD2Bs, I'm like, I know you just want to go into private practice and do your thing, but there's a benefit to kind of going through the system and learning these personalities and kind of the different ways you speak to physicians and different fields and lines of work, because ultimately your athletes can present with metabolic conditions. And so it's helpful to have a much broader perspective going into this besides just performance nutrition, sports nutrition, or kind of working through disordered eating behaviors. But, coming back to where I am now and like a lot of the aggressive work I would say I'm doing in terms of like mothers and mothers to be that also embrace athleticism at all levels is just how unsupported we are just at baseline, let alone if you're an athlete, and how poor like the general public information is, particularly as it relates to nutrition. I find, as I expressed earlier in the context of performance, it's an untapped lever, but as it relates to the perinatal component of it and even fertility, it's just very misguided or rigid or based in supplementation. And that doesn't have to be the case. I understand why public health and some of these guidelines are what they are, but they're overly safe versus actually explaining why, they don't have sushi when you can have sushi, but where are you getting it from?
And oh God, don't start me with that one. I see this a lot though on like, there's a lot of running Facebook groups and social media groups and that stuff out there. And, and I do see a lot where women who are athletes before the perinatal period don't have a good sense of nutrition. There's probably some body image issues or probably some disordered eating that may not have been dealt with, or if it was, I think the work hadn't been extrapolated forward to that perinatal period, because these women get pregnant or it's impacting fertility and they, are not fueling enough. And, they're kind of on the borderline of red S, or they get pregnant and they don't realize that their energy is trash and they have to eat more and maybe run a little less and that kind of stuff. And I feel like it's so hard to navigate even fertility and pregnancy when they don't, no one was ever handed a good idea of how you should fuel as an athlete, period. I still feel like I'm learning that even more now because we had a banana. I can't tell you how many times, like, over the years, I would run fasted in the morning and not think twice about it, or go do a workout fasted and wonder why I felt like trash afterwards. Like, why don't we start with the basics there? So, like, for an athlete who's running, you know, several days a week and they're wanting to get pregnant, like, how do we have those conversations to at least start down that road of like, hey, this is about to be a wild freaking ride?
Well, on my end, from like a coaching standpoint or like mini workshop discussion, you know, entry point, it's actually having them identify, in all honesty, like their expectations for what this looks like versus what are the things that they're doing. And then you compare that to like a mini presentation of like, here's what you need to be doing.
Yep.
And by the way, like 1600 calories, 1800 calories is not going to cut it for you now. Like, that's actually not the health place for you to be. You know, we're upwards of another 1000 plus calories that would be more helpful and supportive for you. You know, a lot of it comes back to, even as I expressed, that early nutrition education for like girls, even, you know, the nutrients that are required for us for growth, development, and in turn, like athletic performance, iron, vitamin D, calcium, enough protein, enough carbohydrate, and total calories are the things that we continue to need as athletes. Also, when you get into fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, the nutrients actually don't change. If you look at even trimester to trimester, you need more of them. So if you have been in a state of low energy availability, even if it's mild, for a couple of years, you're setting yourself up to potentially have some issues or concern with that. Or again, even feel potentially worse in your first time, right? Yep. Like, if you're going in undernourished, and on top of that, we have the potential for things like nausea and vomiting and food aversions. And it allows for us to dig ourselves into a deep energy hole. And then if you put training expectations on top of it, we're depleting ourselves of even more energy and not putting in enough to support it all. So my initial discussions are, what are you doing? What do you expect to happen? Do you understand what would be in your best interest to do? And so we often start with the negotiables. And then I'm a big fan of therapy for people who haven't gone through this process, to unpack the relationship to your body, particularly heading into a potential pregnancy, because we know that our body's going to change.
Yep.
We know that we can continue to be athletes, and there's ways we can do that alongside, but we have no control over exactly what that's going to look like until we know what our pregnancy looks like.
Right.
We know what labor and delivery looks like, and then your recovery. So it's preparing yourself for the unknown. It's preparing yourself for, and I love to talk about pregnancy, labor, and also postpartum as the great surrender, if you will. Like, you have to be able to surrender and say, okay, like, this is happening. This thing that I wasn't prepared for is happening. Or like, there's 20 different things that could occur. I'm going to make a decision, the best one I can, based on what's happening. And that's, that is really what you can do. You can be so prepared and so nourished and all the things, and like, stuff's still going to happen. So
it's such,
how are you going to navigate that shift?
It's such a hard conversation. And I always joke around, and it's actually true, is like, the second you conceive is when you start to lose control. And like, the sooner you kind of just, and you can hear those things in pregnancy, but you don't like hear them until postpartum, I think. And then you're in it. But to me, it's such a departure when you look in the rear view. I mean, my oldest, he's going to be 13, in a week. And, it was still the generation of, do whatever you want, you're eating for two. And I feel like it's such a whiplash to, okay, now we're telling people, hey, you can work out, you can do all these things. And I get scared when I have you know, a new mom come in, she's pregnant, and we talk about her movement history, and there's a history of bone stress injuries, and they haven't talked to somebody about nutrition, or if they did, it was very cursory, and they haven't spoken with somebody about body image and how that's going to change, because that can screw with your head, whether you've got issues or not. It's just absolute whiplash, I think, from you're eating for two to, wait, we've got all this other stuff going on. And, you know, people are trying to control what they control. And sometimes in that case, it is, you know, food and so on. So how, as far as, you know, how to find people or even how to approach somebody that you recognize, like, hey, there's stuff going on here. This person's going to need help. So from a clinician perspective, or even from a, you know, hey, I'm recognizing this is going on with myself. Like, where do you begin?
So I'm a big fan of outsourcing your care when possible.
Yes.
Right.
So me too.
Find informed practitioners. I think if anybody is listening to this podcast, then they're aware of you, they are now aware of me. Like, they're aware of different people that they could reach out to and say, hey, I recognize myself in some of the things that you're sharing. What does it look like to get help? In what ways can you support me virtually as in person? Or, you know, I would love to work with you, but I see that's virtual. I'd love to see someone in person. Can you help direct me to someone that might be able to support that? Because that's the first step. You have to be able to start with the help. I'll tell you, like, from my end as a dietitian, like, my sessions are very talk therapy style. I am never telling you what to do. I like to think that I am the like guide, essentially, in your journey. So instead of you looking at all of this information, just throwing darts at a wall, I'm like, okay, how do you feel about this? Let's try this first. Does it work? Yes. Okay, we're keep going. Not a fan of it. It's not going well. Okay, not a problem. Let's try this instead. And so it's like very intentional hand holding throughout the process. And then I do a lot of unpacking of narratives, understanding like the stories that you have told yourself that bring you to this moment. So the reason I love that we started with, hey, Mel, what brought you into this work? And I've shared, like, I have my own history of pretty severe disordered eating behavior that was very much tied to my body and very much tied to athleticism in my sport. That can show up and it will show up if you don't address it as you encounter other transitions. So one of the bigger pieces I see, and this would be my note to anyone who's struggled with their relationships with their body, and, you know, that doesn't have to be an eating disorder. You know, an eating disorder is another animal. It's clinical. Yes, there's a diagnosis, and I understand, and I say this with so much love and compassion, that for some people having that can be validating, but my goal is always to catch people in a state of disordered eating where it's normalized by culture, it's normalized by the people around you, right? So that's the other piece of athleticism, or even, unfortunately, some of the physicians you might see, you know, behavior isn't necessarily assessed. So if you're only looking at BMI, which, as we know, is useless, or some other pieces, then you're missing like the part of you that's having a really difficult time in your head making decisions. So, you know, be honest with yourself about where you're at and just starting by asking for help would be the first step, truly.
Yeah. No, and I think
even we're suggesting that.
Yeah. Even just the awareness, I think that there are people that specialize in perinatal nutrition, I think is so incredibly important. And I feel like maybe that's just been recently too, or the algorithm is steering me that way. I don't know. But I have a good friend that she's a dietitian, but she's like, you know, she does like diabetes, or, you know, we kind of think of those basic things, but it's nice to know that, you know, we have nutrition and dietitians that are focused on this particular time period, that the needs are really important. And then, you know, continuing to evolve into postpartum. So to kind of circle back to you, kind of what was your experience kind of going into pregnancies? Were you like, okay, I know I'm going to have to step up on this. I know that I might have some issues that I run into. Like, did you anticipate anything? What did you experience?
So I have a child, he's 2 years old, or 2.5-ish, two and change.
Are you okay?
I am. I know, technical COVID baby. I am. I think if I'm being honest, I went back to therapy. So as soon as we knew like we were going to start to try, I went back to therapy because I knew there were things that would pop up because I do this work. So I'm not afraid, ashamed to say it. Like I met with someone, Amanda, she was fine. Like by no means was she wonderful, but she had some great tools that were helpful for me to be able to process and say, okay, mm-hmm. I can navigate this. I'm prepared to navigate it. But I had a number of different trips that occurred for me because it was the pandemic. I got pregnant in, I guess, December of 2020, but mm-hmm. I was supposed to get married in March of 2020, literally the week that we shut everything down. So, and I was supposed to run the New York City Marathon, which had been my first marathon, in November of 2020. So I had some big events in my life that I had to grieve. And as expressed earlier, it transitions or like big changes or surprises that just hit you are often triggers for people who have struggled with disordered eating behavior. So, you know, I was already aware of like, okay, like there are things happening here that are totally outside of my control. What are the things or decisions I can make? So I ran my first marathon virtually. So I ran New York virtually. I said, I'm going to train my booty off because that is something I still can do. I can run this race the way that it was designed, but like I can run it. I'm capable of that. And then, yeah, like let's make a baby. And was very fortunate in that I was able to successfully do both of those things pretty seamlessly. But again, not without having done like the mental health work of being prepared for the shifts and changes that would occur.
Yeah. Now shifting into postpartum, obviously, you know, we're not cooking a baby anymore, but we turn into the milk machine. Lots of different calorie demands. There was some podcast I was listening to. It was like a pro runner. I can't remember her name. They did some calculation on how much energy she spent on breastfeeding. And I think it was insane. It's like very equivalent to like running 80 miles a week or something like that. It was like over the top type of thing, which I totally believe. What should moms be thinking about kind of looking ahead and being like, hey, my calorie demands are going to change. Also throwing in there, you don't know what, you know, if your baby's going to have any feeding issues. I remember my son, totally not a fan of Greek yogurt, poor little, you know, mucusy, bloody stools. And so then you're terrified on what to eat and all of that. Like, it's a lot more than just here's your calorie count, eat this, everything's fine. Like you have to see what comes out the other end too. Like, correct. How do you sort of approach that? What was your experience? And then how do you approach that with clients?
Sure. And I think I'll be at this point, like that's actually my favorite population to work with. So ideally I get to work with someone throughout the entire journey because then mm-hmm. by the time they get to postpartum, they actually don't need me. Like one of our last sessions very much besides like a check-in at some point after they've delivered is like planning for postpartum and making sure they have a meal train or making sure they have doula support or whatever is needed, but basically doing like a postpartum planning. You know, I would say all things considered, actually had a really wonderful postpartum experience and I'm still breastfeeding. I will breastfeed this baby until he's 4. That's kind of like my cutoff. But I would love to tandem feed. So that's my personal experience. And I'll say I'm actually working on my IBCLC because.
Oh, that's great.
Especially working with like female athletes at high level sport. There's just, as we know, like little to guidance or race organizations are poorly set up to support lactating athletes. So that's a focal point of mine. But I believe postpartum is much harder than it needs to be for many of us. And it's because there is this deep expectation that we get back to these bodies that we were in beforehand or that we can just do all the things that we were doing beforehand, being right. If it's working and people have to physically go back to work, or, you know, they take care of their own homes and they're doing all like the cooking and cleaning and laundry and you name it. And we need to rest. Actually, from a nutrition standpoint, your needs are more energetically demanding postpartum than during pregnancy. Like, you require more energy. Now, if you were to look this up, it would say around an extra 500 calories a day. I have yet to work with someone, particularly someone who is active, who only needs an extra 500 right. calories a day. And yeah. I don't calorie count with my athletes, but I have had women out where they're like, Mel, I feel like I'm eating between 3,500 and 4,000 calories a day. Like, is that okay? Everything feels good. They're recovering well. They're returning to sport. Like, they're healing. But their appetite is grassing. I'm like, yes, that's okay. And like, we need to normalize that type of energy is required, not just for your healing recovery, but particularly if you're looking to return to sport. And it's hard because there are also a number of very well followed social media influencers. I didn't say dietitians, although there are some, I would say, problematic dietitians in this space as well. But there's a number of, I'm going to say, health coaches who are very well followed, who are like, yeah, 2,600 calories, like, that's what I need. And they're showing up with their six pack after 12 weeks postpartum. And yeah. You're like, that might work for you. That might very well work for you. But there's a large chance that like, that's not the thing that's going to work for everybody else. Right. And so my love note to anybody listening is like, your body is yours alone, and your needs are going to very much depend on how you took care of yourself in those 9+ months leading into the delivery of this baby, how long that labor and delivery was, what your actual recovery or support is. I mean, some people have night nurses and postpartum doulas who are there where they can actually get more sleep. I'm comfortable being like the vast majority of us, like, I didn't have that. It was my husband and I also like,
there was none of that.
Yeah. I mean, I run my own business. That didn't stop because that's just me. So right. Like we keep going. But all of that requires energy besides the fact that you brought a baby into the world. Oh, that is depleted. And so, yeah, we require energy. We require a lot of it. And that gentle note of like that 500 calories is probably not going to cut it. If you're hungry,
I feel like there's like a couple kind of points there that I was thinking about as you were talking. One is that first time mom and it goes back to what you were saying before about expectations. And like, we would all love to be that person that walked out of the hospital in our pre-pregnancy jeans. My genetics did not allow for that, nor did the C-section and the swelling and all that other stuff. And then you have these kind of things that people tell you where, oh, if you breastfeed, the weight will drop right off, or, you know, and you're also assuming too, you're like, okay, well, I'm not, if you're anything like my first, I couldn't really put him down. So I'm not like baking and making these amazing meals, and we didn't have meal trains back in the day. And so you think, okay, well, if I'm at least, you know, making all this milk and I'm not eating this much, shouldn't the weight drop off? And so that's kind of the first place that I feel like people run into problems. The second place is the third time mom, that if things worked out great the first time, they think they do the same thing the second time and it doesn't happen. And then they start freaking out and they're like, well, it didn't happen like that the first time. What's going on? So like we have the first like blast in the face. And then it comes back again. Like, how would you navigate those two scenarios kind of differently?
Well, in like a general, even for both, it's coming back to this idea again that I literally do with everyone is, what's your expectation? Can we talk about all of, because your expectations are the thing that set you up for disappointment or like big yahoos. Right. If you're expecting something to happen and it doesn't happen, then that can be devastating. You throw postpartum on top of that and that hormone drop, and like it can really drop you into a very dark place. And it has for many people. So being very clear heading into first pregnancy or second, third, fourth, fifth, doesn't matter. like coming back to this place of what am I expecting? You know, understanding if you have had babies for before, of course you're going to compare it. You have this information. How could you not? So right. I'm not sitting here saying don't compare, but I am asking you to take a step and be like, this can be different. I have to be open to this being different. And how can I set myself up to have support to navigate it?
Yeah.
In the first piece, talking about, man, I hate how we talk about breastfeeding or how it's almost marketed. I'm trying to like tone myself down here, but it's marketed as like, here's your weight loss tool, breastfeed because you're going to lose
weight. I know.
It is just not the reality. That was not my experience. It sounds like it was not yours. I do know some people who did have that experience. So again, not negating anyone's N1 experience for what they are, but that's what it is. I think when we talk about breastfeeding, let's talk about it for what it is and what it does, the effect, not kind of the outcome, cause, and how that's going to impact any one person's body, because the impact on your body is going to be yours alone.
Yep.
Because of things, again, that are beyond just your immediate control. Right. Genetics absolutely play a role in that. I think anyone who's had up and down severe dieting histories will play a role in that. How much are you able to consume? Because let's forget, we talk about not eating enough to support needs, low energy availability, which, or REDS, or relative energy deficiency in sport, for those of you who don't know what this is, which is often talks about solely in the context of athletics, is not just for athletes, it's for any of us. And that's the only thing about that kills me with the S, is like, can we just take,
I know, just leave it red
away for a minute.
Yeah.
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 Because especially in this context with new mothers, I know you see it because I've heard you talk about it, and I see it all the time. And so that low energy availability can be intentional because of, again, this desire to, okay, I've had this baby, I want to work towards this body that I visualize and I see myself in that is not the one I'm in right now. But it could also be, and I have worked with these mothers who are anxious. They can't put their baby down. They don't have food readily available to eat. Their head is in 20 different places outside of feeding themselves. They might not have an appetite. Yeah. And so they don't eat enough. And so we can end up in states of low energy availability at any point in our life, but particularly in postpartum, just because we're not prepared for it. Yeah. And so again, one of the things I really like to do is, how are we setting people up for success postpartum? And it's an important conversation to have, Carrie, because there's a lot of hype around pregnancy. And like, of course, I want to support pregnancy, but we're not paying enough attention to what happens after, and not just the first 12 weeks, but what happens after that, because yes, we know that postpartum is forever, but I really do believe that people are in the thick of it, even for like those first 5 years of life, until your kid is maybe in school for the first time, because if you don't have childcare, I mean, there's so much to
it. We're going to pause right there for a second. So before we jump ahead, I want to talk about that. Before we jump ahead, two points I wanted to bring up. One, to kind of go back just a little bit. A lot of times I have moms that they come in and they're proud of how little weight they gained in pregnancy. And like, well, I only gained this. And I don't care for, thank you, those guidelines where they're like, only gain this much weight. I gained, I think, 45 with my oldest and then like 60 with my youngest. And like, all good, happy babies. They were big kids anyway. Like, it's all good. And I hate that fear is put into us, or that expectation, like you said, is, well, if you don't gain that much weight, you don't have that much to lose. And then the other one is, well, is my tummy ever going to be flat again? To which I always ask, was it ever flat before? Because mine has never been flat. I have no reason to believe that if it wasn't flat before, it sure as hell ain't going to be flat now. And that one is such a weird thing when moms are like, oh, is it going to be flat again? And it never was. Like, why? How do we get that in our head to expect that just because we had a kid?
I mean, Well, so kind of going off of the first point, I'm comfortable saying I hate those recommendations because I do. Again, that ties into like recommendations that are associated with, if you're in this BMI range, you should, which, you know, I think the word should implies shame and guilt and a lot of other things. So it's not a word that I'm a fan of using in my vocabulary. But there are recommended weight ranges, and same thing, a better marker, honestly, if someone is kind of curious or just wondering how much weight they may not gain, is actually to see, what about your mom? What about your grandmother's?
Right.
Like, where kind of were their ranges? I also think it's important to look at your spouse or your partner. If you have an idea of what that might be, like how, what did that look like in their family? You know, I can say my husband, my son, I knew I would have a smaller baby probably in the first time, they would get a little bit bigger. My sister, her husband is like 6'8". Like, they are all big babies. My sister's 5'1". She had a 10 pound baby for her first baby. Yeah. And she gained a significant amount of weight. And but we knew, right? Like, we knew going in, okay, it is likely that this is gonna happen. This is another one. Like, you, this is not something that we can manipulate. The baby is going to gain, your blood volume is going to shift. Like, you're going to be holding more water. Your organs are shifting. Like, so much is happening. You're not going to be able to, and as a dietitian and someone who specializes in this area, I'm comfortable saying, if you work with someone and they promise you, you know what, you're only going to gain 25 pounds, you're only going to gain 40 pounds, like, run. Because no one can promise you that. And even if a weight loss journey, no one can promise you that.
I'm happy that no one like was like, oh, you need to do it. Cause like everything medically was fine. So there was really no, but I have clients that are like, oh, well, my doctor says I'm gaining too much weight. And they're not, they look like medically they're good. I'm like, why is this starting? Why?
There are so many other things that, there's so many other things that we can look at. And, you know, this is one of those, what kills me because of the work that I do in nutrition and dietetics is I feel like nutrition, as I've said, an untapped lever for so many things. Like, we are not called in to support. We're not called in to help. If someone is, if you're concerned about someone's weight or someone's health in the context of their pregnancy, you know, I could look through a 2-3 page, you know, 24 day journal, if that was significant, what they're usually doing, and be like, okay, like, you are not getting the nutrients that you need to get, the nutrients you need, you know, calorically, same thing. Like, you're getting enough? Is there a variety here? And then again, why is that happening? Is there food insecurity? Is there a lack of knowledge? Do you understand? Do you know where to get that? Like, what do you need to support? So weight is just such a poor indicator on its own in isolation as to if there's a problem.
It's just, I think that's well said. And it freaks people out and it's such a shame, but all right, now let's jump back to what we were talking about before, because there's a lot of fun things that come up when you have toddlers and into elementary and older kids. My son, who's taught me everything, made wonderful homemade baby food. He ate everything, you know, then everything had to be in, I think, quesadilla format for a while. And then everything had to be like, in ragu spaghetti sauce for a while. And then it got kind of narrowed down to like, you know, 11 things. We're doing better. We're doing better. But I think it's another thing that moms don't anticipate is, you know, maybe you're making a meal for one kid and a different meal for another kid. And then, you know, you're eating a corner of a grilled cheese sandwich and that's not a meal either. And those little stupid puffs and like, nutrition kind of goes down the drain, because I think as kids get more active and you're taking them to things and whatnot, like, even now, like, I turn into a chauffeur at about, you know, 3:30, and, you know, we've got to make sure meals are on the table and, you know, that I'm getting enough to eat too when I'm thinking about them. So those are demands that like moms aren't even thinking about. So what kind of advice do you have for them? I think you actually asked a question on Instagram and you're like, okay, we'll talk about this later.
Yeah. It's so funny because meal planning, it's not something that you talk about, especially on Instagram most of the time, but that question got so much feedback. And I remember saying to my husband, I was like, I should probably talk about this a lot more openly because I think it's something I take for granted.
I literally thought about this in the shower this morning. I'm like, which do you hate more? Meal planning dinner or putting on a sports bra after a shower? Like, which do you hate more? Which is harder? I think meal planning is harder than putting on a sports bra after a shower. Or which leggings lot, or something like that. Exactly. So and I hate picky too. And I think before I had a child who like he's gonna be like the next Washington Post like food critic because the dude can put out 7 hot dogs and he can pick out his exact brand. Like he has a sense that I do not possess. So when he says that doesn't taste right, I believe him. He's not picky. He's very clear. He's very clear.
Yeah.
So what should she prepare for?
So, you know, and if you're someone who doesn't like the meal plan, you know, again, is this something you can offload? So being conscious of people who might have more resources monetarily than others, there are a number of different ways we could do this, right? Like you can meal prep yourself ahead of time. There are meal delivery services, not the ones that you get to your house that are a kit that you prepare, but like literal good meal delivery services where it's a prepared meal. And maybe that's for yourself, your spouse, partner. And then it's just preparing something else for the kids. If, you know, we're thinking budget, and so you're preparing for everyone in your home, instead of preparing multiple meals, the thing that I would do, big fan of a list, is like, okay, what does this person eat? Like kind of list each of those things out. And so how can we overlook between a meal, right? Like if mac and cheese is always going to be a staple, okay, like can we prepare mac and cheese and do burgers one night? Can we do mac and cheese, maybe like meatballs or chicken balls? Yeah. Can we do, you know, so like, how can we do that? And again, those are things I would say, those are the reach out for things, because you could meet with someone like me and be like, hey, this is my problem. That isn't necessarily coaching. That's like a one-time deep session to help you family plan.
Right.
And you can do it within the context of any budget, but there's definitely a skill set involved with doing it. But it also comes down to the negotiables and the non-negotiables. What are you expecting to happen? What are you willing to do? Because there's no right or wrong way to do it. I mean, that's the other love note I would give to any mom or caregiver is there's not one way to do this, but there is the way that is going to be best for you, no matter what time frame you have, because I also think meal prep comes with this idea of like, oh my gosh, I don't want to spend 3 hours on a Sunday. You don't have to. We can, it can be as complicated or as simple as you need it to be. Yep. You know, in my house, it's the same things on occasion. I might change like 2 meals. And I know that as a mom who's also runs her own business and, you know, is home doing her things, like that's the best I can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Deal with that.
Well, I think also, I mean, I grew up in a generation where, you know, you eat what's on your plate, all of it, and you be thankful and you're going to sit there till the plate's empty and everybody sits and has a meal together and eats the same thing. And that's not my experience as a parent. My husband and I work completely different hours. The kids have activities, like we're long gone before he gets home. And even like when I was like, all right, well, we'll all eat whatever my son wants. Like I got tired of it after a while. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And being okay with, I'm going to make what I need for me. And fortunately he's old enough now where I was like, all right, you tell me, you know, if you need anything extra, but like, hey, this stuff is here. You pick what you want. And then, you know, we can kind of go from there. I think it was a big shift to make sure that I was meeting my own needs and not just, you know, being like, all right, I'm going to eat Trader Joe's meatballs every single freaking night because that's what he loves and hates the turkey ones. So yeah, I mean, I think again, that's stuff that you have no sense of in just the early, you know, periods. And when you're thinking about, you know, introducing solids and introducing just like food as a concept too, like showing your kids that like, hey, I can fuel myself and I need to eat things and be exposed to things and whatnot. It gets a little messy. When you're also trying to feed kids that might have different needs and stuff like that too. So it's a weird space. It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, well, and oh my gosh, like feeding for the first time, can be very stressful. I mean, this is what I do. And I was like, oh, I'm going to love this. And I hated it. It was very stressful. It was a lot of anxiety. And I recognize, and this is actually how I often talk about it now, is because you have a couple different methods. So the baby led weaning, or you have parade. So now not only do adults have diets, we have diets for children.
And I know it's so much. Like,
well, if I do it this way, then I'm not doing it. And if you take a step back, then you can say, oh, I don't have to follow all these rules. Like, I can do a little bit of this. So my love note to anyone navigating that or who will be is you don't have to do it exactly one way. You can feed your baby, and this goes for breast milk, formula, you know, the thing is that you're feeding your baby. We want to make sure you're feeding your baby. They're going to be seeing a pediatrician. We have their growth curves. If they're not getting enough, you're going to know because their growth curve will be off. And I say like their growth curve because they each develop their own. So you have markers for how they're doing, but you don't have to do it one way. And we have to, as the person caring for them, if we're not functioning, then nobody else.
Yeah.
We know that. Please, like, if you're always the last thought, how can you take just one step today to do something for you? If it's making sure you block 5 minutes to grab something to eat yourself or drink some, I'm drinking my hot electrolytes here, drink some water or electrolytes, do that.
Yep. Yeah, I wish we had more of those back in the day. We have really cool stuff now that I'm totally taking advantage of to fuel and whatnot. Didn't have it back then. So, all right. At the end of every episode, we run through a few questions. So first of all, any book you're reading or podcast you're listening to right now?
Oh, I'm listening to your podcast. I actually...
Good one.
it is. It's great. Again, like, totally in line with the vibe, with the energy. I gave a presentation last week to a bunch of like high school track and field coaches on low energy availability and supporting girls through puberty. And so I was listening to every podcast that Lauren Fleshman had been on because Good for a Girl is such a great book for this.
Good.
And it was a resource for them.
Yep.
So that brought me into Kara and Dez's new podcast as well. So just like
I love it.
Starting to get catched up.
That's a good one too.
Those have been the big two.
Okay, cool. What is it? Nobody Asked Us with Dez and Kara. I love that one. That's a good one. I listen to that one usually and Allie on the Run. And some audiobooks. I'm totally into audiobooks this year. Oh, all right, next one. Favorite activity.
I haven't done yet. Oh,
okay, you'll get there, I promise.
To be honest with you, I think it would be either the farmer's market on a Saturday morning. I'm a big farmer's market fan. Or honestly, just going to the supermarket. There's something, I think it's because I just know food. It's like a very calming, soothing situation for me. But I tend to either do both of those things on my own or bring my toddler with me. And I just get a kick of how excited he gets to go.
That is a very cool thing. My daughter used to have a thing with the checkout guy. No, she had a thing with the checkout guy. I'm totally not kidding. He was like an early 20 something or something like that. And like, she knew everybody that worked in the grocery store. And that was her jam. And it's really cute too, as the kids get older and they still recognize the same people. And, you know, because the grocery store is where you go when you got to get out of the house and it's raining and you've got no other place to go. Your kid just needs to get the hell out. So grocery store people see you in different states of, you know, life. So anyway, I love the grocery store. All right. One piece of advice for new moms. You've given us some lovely love notes, as you said earlier. What's one big takeaway for you?
Give yourself grace. So think about what that means for you. If you're a new mom actively navigating motherhood, know that just like your pregnancy and the journey as a whole, like this is very much a place of learning. And there's a lot of things that come up that are yours. And so giving yourself the ability to be conscious and aware of that, if you find yourself reacting to your child or your partner or anything because of something that your child did, I would encourage you to give yourself the space to be like, is this something I'm caring? Is this something that I need to deal with? Because there's something that'll, I think, set you off more than seeing yourself in your kids or just being triggered by things that were, you know, you were told are bad or you shouldn't do or any of those things. And they do that and you don't actually recognize why you're reacting, that just the fact that you're reacting means it's hitting the cord and, you know, you deserve time to from whatever that might be. So please give yourself some grace.
I think 95% of the time that I ask that question, that's the answer that I get back. So for those of you that are, you know, you haven't had your kid yet or you're thinking about having one, or you currently have one, and this is just a reminder, and it doesn't matter when your kids get older either, because it's the same advice. So good news, get it early and live it. All right. Who's somebody in this space that you're kind of like jazzed about right now, whether, you know, it's kind of perinatal nutrition or diet or even like female athletes, you know, who's somebody that's got your attention right now?
You know, I'm a big fan of doing a lot of work in others. So assuming that you have a lot of followers that are mothers and athletes or support mothers and athletes, I feel like a mother is still relatively grassroots, but they're doing a lot of beautiful and incredible work.
Yes.
Trying to change legislation, trying to bring resources and support to high-level athletes, and in turn, like all mothers who work and what does that mean? What are the things we need? How do we change to best support us navigating our different stages of life? So the giving mother.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. And just giving support as much as possible. So yeah, no, I love that. All right. And then last but not least for you, what does it mean to you to be an active mom in postpartum?
I feel like the gift that I've received entering into motherhood as an athlete is allowing myself to shift. So being humbled by all of the things that my body is capable of. And, you know, at this particular point in my journey, I'm not running as fast as I was, but I'm still running. My lifts are actually much more aggressive, and that's good. I have quirks and things, as I expressed to Carrie earlier, I'm dealing with some sciatica. Like, my body's going through a lot. But the lesson and the gift in that is like, you are capable of all of it. You're able to do it. It's an important time for me. And it has given me more grace to listen to my body and say, you know what, like, I need to take a day off. Or, you know what, maybe instead of a run, I go do some yoga or mobility. It has given me a different lens as to what it means to be flexible and have gratitude for all the things I can do.
I think that's well put. Motherhood teaches you a lot to put in
place. Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you'd like to know more about Mel and her work, she does one-on-one nutrition coaching and also single session intensive sessions for moms. You can find her on nutritionbymel.com/coaching or on Instagram, Nutrition by Mel. Thank you, my dear. I look forward to many more video DMs at O'Dark30 in the morning.
Yes, I'll show up there for you. I promise.
Love it. Love it. Thanks so much for being on the show. Did you enjoy the podcast? If so, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and tell a friend to do the same. Are you a postpartum mom or postpartum pro wanting to know more about getting back to running after baby? Check out all my free goodies on carriepagliano.com. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Carrie Pagliano and her guests to the show. The content should not be taken as medical advice and is for entertainment purposes only. Always consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.